We don't have a quorum, but we're going to start the meeting, and the first thing is the Department of Health presentation of the governor's budget proposal. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for the opportunity to present the governor's budget recommendations for the Department of Health. For the record, I'm Craig Akam. I'm the Assistant Commissioner of Health. And Barb Julek, our Chief Financial Officer, was unable to join me today, so...
Oh, you're in trouble.
You're just stuck with me, so... and I might be, so... You know, before I go into our change pages, I just want to reiterate some of the conversation from yesterday and mention that, you know, these are exceptionally challenging times for the state budget. A lot of the recommendations that are put forth here in the governor's budget for the Department of Health might not be programs that we would slate for reductions or elimination in better times. The fact that they are here is no reflection on their importance or effectiveness as we see it. But matter, you know, the Department of Health was asked, along with all state agencies, to participate in helping to solve the state deficit. And in the framework that we are working in, these are some of our best recommendations. So I also want to remind the committee that the Department of Health's budget jurisdiction is split between two committees, this one and Representative Clark's committee. We'll just be talking about the Department of Health's budget items that relate to this committee's jurisdiction today. So to start off, to walk through our change pages, the first one outlines four grant reductions that the governor is recommending. The first one impacts the Rural Hospital Capital Improvement Grant Program. This is actually not a true reduction, but rather a delay in the awarding of the grants. Normally, these grants go out in March. Instead, we propose to move that deadline back to July and take the savings from this year's appropriation for that program. But we feel it have very little impact on the grantees for the hospitals. The second is a reduction in the Federally Qualified Health Center Grant Subsidy Program. The original funding for this program was $1,500,000 annually in 2008. That was increased to $2,500,000. This proposal would reduce it back to the 2008 level. It's also of note to say that because of the federal stimulus program that was passed earlier this year, there was a direct appropriation in the ERA funds for federally qualified health centers. And here in Minnesota, they've received over $16 million this year directly from the federal government for their support and operation.
And Mr. Akam, are we going to run any trouble with maintenance of effort, or doesn't that apply to this?
Mr. Chairman, that does not apply to these funds. The third reduction is in the statewide health improvement program. The SHIP program was enacted as well in the 2008 legislation health reform bill. There was a one-time funding of $20 million this current year and $27 million in the next. The governor is proposing reducing the SHIP funding by $10 million next year to $17 million in effort. And finally, the last grant reduction is to the medical education MERC program. DHS already testified yesterday that they are reducing their PMAP share of the MERC program in next year. The Department of Health, while we administer the program, we get the PMAP funding through the Department of Human Services. This would be the cigarette tax money, dedicated cigarette tax funds that come directly to the department also from MERC. We would, in that, there are three direct grantees: the University of Minnesota Medical Center Fairview, the School of Dentistry, and the Academic Health Center. They would see their grants reduced by about a third under this proposal. And then the rest of the cigarette tax money would go into the total pool for the formula allocation. Mr. Chairman, moving on to the next page, grant eliminations. There's two grants listed. Only one affects this committee. The donated dental grant program is $63,000 that's provided to the Minnesota Dental Association to cover their administrative costs for running the donated dental program. None of those funds go directly to providing direct dental services to individuals, and these funds are out of the access fund.
Mr. Chair, are you taking questions here?
Yeah,
I have
a specific question.
Yeah. That, I carried both these projects, that and the lead thing. And so do they think that'll just, will that continue in some way? Is there any collateral way to do that donated dental thing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, the Minnesota Dental Association does not rely entirely on our $63,000 contribution for their organization to administer this program. We feel that while it's their decision, they would continue to find a way, I imagine, to continue this program on.
Thank you.
Does this, some of this money go to the malpractice insurance for these people? Or is that someplace else? In the
yeah, Mr. Chairman, I believe that's someplace else. So.
Okay. Mr. Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. Moving on to the next change page, agency-wide administrative reductions. The governor has proposed or recommended a permanent 3% reduction to the Department of Health's administrative budget. This spans all of our state funds. So this includes the general fund, the health care access fund, and the state government special revenue fund. Because the state government special revenue fund is in essence based on fees that are charged that are then correlated to direct program expenses, what this actually means for that program is just a reduction in spending in the current biennium, but no transfer of funds would happen as part of this proposal for the SGSR fund to balance the general fund. In addition, the governor has also recommended an additional 3% general fund operating reduction to all state agencies, which will be traveling under a separate MMB change page, likely through government operations. Those additional cuts are not reflected here in this change page. I believe the governor's and MMB's proposal is to look to the Department of Administration and Office of Enterprise Technology for system-wide savings across the executive branch state agencies. And then if those savings can't be achieved to meet the $9 million target, that agencies would then be allocated the difference.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Abler.
I have some friends in town that actually have two jobs, so I see more health department employees working at like Walmart and stuff in the evenings. Or anyway, just how, assuming that at some point someone thought those positions were important and there's been reductions through the last several cycles, I mean, everybody I asked, at least off the record, they said they don't know how they're going to handle that. Do you have an answer you can give me on the record of any kind, or is it just you're going to work through it and the best you can? Or
yeah. Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, actually we do outline what some of those reductions might mean on the back of your change page.
Okay. Thank you.
And so in the general fund, this would mean a $612,000 reduction in one-time savings from the current year. We feel that we can do that by shifting to federal funds that we have received because of the stimulus funding and our H1N1 response. And also that we've moved staff to those activities this year as a result of that pandemic and holding vacancies. And then $401,000 would be spread across a variety of different department capacities. Most of these are in another committee's jurisdiction, except that I would make note that this could potentially impact the Center for Health Statistics and our work around occupational analysis. More to this committee's interest, the next category, healthcare access fund reductions, there would be $251,000 in fiscal year 2010 and $122,000 in 11 in mostly one-time savings, also by holding vacancies and moving to other sources of funding. And then $220,000 in the 10-11 biennium, and $200,000 in the 12-13 biennium for reductions to our current health care reform efforts. These reductions, these funds, will limit the department's ability to meet the state's health care reform goals. This includes a reduction of half an FTE in health care homes. And the beginning next year, $116,000 reduction for the elimination of reporting activities by the department for three reports: the provider financial and statistic report, the capital expenditure review report, and the prescription drug report. And this also includes a one FTE reduction.
Mr. Akam, the state health care reform goals were intended to save money, and I realize that Mr. Hoffman wouldn't give us the savings. Do you have any idea of how much slowing that down would reduce potential savings?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know that I can answer that question today. It would impact components of that effort differently. There would still be some components that would move ahead on the schedule that they're on. There would be others that would be delayed or slowed.
I know you're giving a brief overview today, but I'd be very interested in the details of that. So continue.
Mr. Chairman, members, moving on to the next page. There is an initiative around e-health compliance with federal activities. As the committee members may remember, part of the federal stimulus bill included about $30 billion for states as incentives for providers to begin using electronic health records. And the incentives are set up in that they're time limited. The sooner that providers are able to make use of electronic health records in a meaningful way, the larger the incentive is to be paid to them through Medicaid and Medicare. Our goal here is to bring the state of Minnesota into compliance with those goals by providing a state infrastructure for electronic information exchange. That is in its fledgling form in the state. This would provide a more comprehensive effort to license and regulate and oversee the health information exchange functions, so that all providers who are able to implement an electronic health record would have a way of exchanging that information between them.
Yeah, and so, yeah. Again, Mr. Akam, I think that I will have a hearing on this particular issue, and also the fact that you got the 9.6 last Friday, I believe.
That's correct, announced, Mr. Chair.
And there was about another $25-30 million that went to other groups, including Stratus Health.
Correct.
For information technology, and I think I'd be interested in understanding how all these different things are fitting together.
Sure. There are a number of different efforts underway. This would be just one piece of that overall picture. Moving on, Mr. Chair, the next page, healthcare reform clarifications. As I mentioned before, the healthcare reform bill that passed in 2008 included healthcare access funding for some components of our health reform activities that were to be available until expended. That was allow the correct amount of time for those activities to happen, understanding that they were often sequenced and in other cases very involved, particularly with stakeholder input. The rider for that expires. This would be to reinstate the legislature's intent that those funds be available until expended and continue into the next biennium, or we would expect they would be fully expended by then. And Mr. Chairman, members, our last change page is that the governor would recommend continuing his unallotments from last summer. They are listed here for your reference. As part of the unallotment, the Office of Unlicensed Complementary Alternative Health Care Practice was suspended. The others items here land in the different committee's jurisdiction. The governor would propose the complete elimination of that function rather than just its suspension.
Is that in my budget or Representative Clark's budget?
Mr. Chairman, that one is in your budget. The rest of these are in Representative Clark's budget.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chairman, that's...
Representative Abler has a question.
So with that unlicensed complimentary thing, is it's been gone now for pushing 6 months or so. Mm-hmm. Anybody talked about missing it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Abler, I'm not aware of any inquiries like that. So,
thank you. Representative Root has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Aiken, perhaps these details are coming in the future, but I'm wondering, how do these proposed budget changes, how are they going to impact the ability for the staff to carry out programs such as the SAGE program and some of the other disease-related initiatives?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rood, that's a good question. It would certainly be a reduction in our efforts across the board. The SAGE program and our other cancer control programs are under Representative Clark's jurisdiction, but I'm happy to answer that question here. We would, you know, certainly these are difficult times, and state agencies, including the Department of Health, will be challenged to continue to provide the services that we have provided. And it's frankly unlikely that we would be able to continue to provide the services at the level that we currently are today. And so, you know, I think that we will do our best as state employees and as state agencies to try to manage within that reality. But I can't say that there won't be any impacts.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. And building on that point, there are a bunch of functions that we actually allocate dollars to that fall under just an administrative cost line in your budget. Can we just get all those actually broken out so we see where the dollars are and what all those programs are? Because I don't think they actually end up in our spreadsheets specifically.
Yeah.
And so I'd like to see that broken out by specific appropriation.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, originally when programs are first authorized and money is appropriated, they often are identified to an appropriation, but over time those roll into just a broader appropriation for the department, and they aren't specifically identified in that way.
And what I'm asking for is to have them specifically identified.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ayler.
Thiessen. That's all right.
Excuse me. Thiessen, my apologies. You know, my point is that while we have money allocated to specific program activities, they aren't directed to our agency by appropriation.
Well, I guess even if you don't have the dollars attached, I'd like to see all the programs that are in that line. You must at least have that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Thiessen, certainly.
Okay. Thank you.
Just before we go on, I'd like to acknowledge that we have nurses from Gillette Children's Specialty Services sitting up there. Welcome to the committee, and you must have taken a really long trip to get here. Okay, so who's next here?
Also, you can call the meeting to order.
Oh. Since we have a quorum, I'll call the meeting to order. And was it Rood? Yeah, Representative Rood.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, I had another question in that, and I'm maybe going to get the same answer to this one as well, and that is just, will MDH just be able to make the grants to carry out, for example, the colon cancer screening project that we passed last year?
Mr. Chair, Representative Rood, you're referring to the pilot program? That is not in the governor's budget reduction. I would expect that project to go forward.
Okay. Is that it? Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Akam, for your presentation. And
thank you, Mr. Chair.
We'll be looking at some of these in more detail later. Thank you very much.
We can sign it.
Now we're going to do House File 2859, Representative Simon, and I would move. Where's my agenda? Which one? We had that list. Which one's going? We're going to vote on this. Yeah. Okay. So we are going to vote on this, and I would move that House File 2859 be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee. Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Hopefully this will be quick. It was intended to be a one-word bill. Unfortunately, there's an amendment here that requires it now to be a few more words than that. But, members, what this bill does is a continuation of a policy that's been in place in the state since 1987 and a specific law on the books since 2001 that hasn't, as I have understood it, been controversial in the past. It just says that for nursing facilities where for religious reasons there are certain costs, such as food costs, that are higher, that the facility will not be punished in case of a change in rates. But we discovered that the statute is written such that maybe in a fit of optimism back in 2001 when we couldn't imagine an era of cuts, it only talked about rate increases. It didn't talk about what happened if there were decreases. So this just says either way. It says adjustments either way. There's no fiscal cost to this at this point. And the amendment that's before you, the A-10 amendment, is language that was suggested by the department to do what we wanted to do, basically.
I will then move that we adopt the A-10-2114 amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So we've adopted the amendment to the bill.
Right. Mr. Chair, members, I guess either I would stand for questions, or we have a couple testifiers here if people have questions. This, just to tell you the practical reality, this arose out of concerns in the Jewish community about facilities that provide kosher food for residents. Kosher food is inherently more expensive, and so we just want to make sure that when it comes time to set the rates that there's no punishment involved. That's been, as I said, the longstanding policy of the state, not just for the Jewish community. It's written, obviously, to be religion neutral, but I'll stand for questions or have the testify.
Any questions? Representative Abler.
I heard this in the hall, but I forgot the answer. Is there a cost to this? Does it come out of the pot? Is that how the pie is cut up? Or if there's some money involved, how does that get transacted?
Mr. Chair and Representative Abler, there's no cost.
Okay, any further questions? Then I would renew my motion that House File 2859 be recommended to pass and sent to the Finance Committee.
As amended.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Well, we've done that.
Thank you, members.
And I thank the two witnesses for being very concise today.
You don't often get that from me. So.
And next we have... okay, Representative Abler has House File 1253, and this is just for information. So, Representative Abler.
And is Falk here, too? Are we doing that? Because they're kind of the same bill. Is he coming?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have only a little to say about this. This is actually the Abler-Scalzi bill, if you want to look a little more closely. It's from last year. The Falk bill is quite similar, and so I didn't prepare any witnesses or have a lot of testimony, but the point of this was is for several years we've talked about making Minnesota Care a better product, and if people could, if they're going to have it, then if you had some way... If you're in a world where the Minnesota Care is your product and you wanted to buy a add-on hospital package from someone who would sell you one, we wanted to allow that, and this does that. And that's the bill.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Abler. This is an interesting thing. Could you explain how this compares? I believe, does not Medicare have the same kind of policy that many seniors purchase supplemental care or GAP, what do you call it, Medigap or something like that? Could you kind of explain, is this kind of maybe patterned after that or explain the difference?
Representative Abler.
I'll have to kind of rattle the rocks loose. This is from last year, but it's been an ongoing discussion. But the idea would be a fully subscriber-paid add-on if they could find a way to afford it. And
Partly we didn't know what it would cost, but we thought that the market would find a way to provide this for people. It would be pretty much a $10,000 deductible hospital policy. And would there be a cap or not? There could be different policies available. And so since at the time, and even yet, there's a move that people are in Minnesota Care for a good long time as opposed to being there temporarily, there was a time when Minnesota Care was meant to be a bridge program where they would it would get them through some time when their employer didn't offer coverage they could afford. It's become more of a fixture. And so it was the thinking, if it's going to be a fixture, then can we make it be a fixture that people could actually benefit by? And so I imagine, I was hoping that an array of providers would be happy to sell this product to people who would choose to buy it, and then they would go buy it in the individual market or family market, or maybe an employer can choose to offer it somehow. Although it probably couldn't be an employer, come to think of it. It'd be an individual product, and that was it was allowable if they wanted to do it. And I think the Falk bill is pretty comparable to that.
Yeah, Representative Kiffmeyer, this I think is a little different than the Medicare supplements, because in Medicare you have 100% coverage for hospital costs. The trouble with Minnesota Care for adults, there's a $10,000 hospital cap. And this allows them to buy insurance so that if they have a $20,000 bill, Minnesota Care would pay the first $10,000 and their supplemental policy would pay the next $10,000.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Davis.
Thanks.
Representative Easton.
Thank you. And I guess, because we've heard this bill a couple times, or a variation of it, at least in policy committee, and I have a recollection that one of the concerns is that there's going to be adverse selection involved here. So people that think they're going to actually run over that hospital cap are going to, I don't know if that's true, but we haven't got a fiscal note on this. I guess there's no cost to the state. Is that the deal?
Right. And Mr. Chair, I've not studied the Falk bill to see what's different. I believe mine is just permissive to allow people to buy it. And then the insurance companies would go through their own underwriting, I would predict, and decide if they want to sell it or not to them. And so if it got to Commerce, and I'm not moving it today, but if it would go to Commerce, they would talk about that there.
Right. Well, no, and Mr. Chair, yeah. We've passed this bill out of policy committee. I think we've thought it's been a good idea for several years. Aaron Peterson used to carry it as well. I just have a recollection that the insurance companies had some testimony about it that had to do with it's a product that people wouldn't buy because it would be extremely expensive because of who would select to buy it. And I just want to kind of raise those concerns. I know we're not moving on it. Yeah. Apparently no one else is going to testify about it. So
we could call from the audience to see if anyone
I don't know if anybody wants it particularly. And we only have
13 minutes to burn. Yeah.
Sorry,
maybe
for
any more questions, a health plan person sitting in the back. How would this work with pre-existing conditions? If you're on Minnesota Care, start to get sick, is anybody going to sell you a supplement? So
can I phone a lobbyist, Mr.
Down?
Chair? I'd like to. Mr. Griffin comes forward all the time when he's under the Wheel of Fortune. Oh, I can. Okay, another one. Hey. The wheel, I guess they had different assignments today. So.
Members of the committee, my name is Catherine Commit from the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. We're a little, we had some questions about this bill also. It seems like Representative Abler's bill, it really, as I understand, it's really not the insurance companies that are selling it. It all comes out of the Healthcare Access Fund because the bill is written to 256. It comes out of DHS's budget. It's 256B. So I'm not really clear about how they would develop a product that would just be available for people on Minnesota Care who would then likely be so sick that they would, in turn, choose to purchase a product. So the only people who would be purchasing the product would be those who are pretty sick, who would need hospitalization beyond the $10,000 cap. And then for a product like that, it's likely to be extremely expensive, so I don't know if they could afford it. I understand the intent behind it, but I just don't know practically how that would work.
Okay. And is the same thing true in the Falk bill?
I think so. His bill is, I think, is the same thing. I think it's maybe more about what Representative Abler was suggesting, that somebody, some company or some organization, some insurance company would come forward and simply sell a product that had a would only be for coverage from $10,000 and beyond, and that would be a very, very expensive product. I don't know who would sell it.
Okay.
That's the bill.
That's the information. Representative Thiessen has a question, and I think Representative Volk is.
Well, this would be to both of them. I mean, I don't know that there's a particular fiscal note, except maybe for the administrative cost side of it, but what we need to get is actuarial work done on it, and, you know, maybe that's where money needs to be spent if we're going to, or maybe just let the market work and see if.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, I was waiting for Representative Gottwald to perk up at the thought of market working. But
actually did.
Oh, is he trying to raise his hand?
Wait.
Oh, he's awake.
Representative Gottwald, do you have a comment or question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, I think this is the sort of thing, frankly, where if you can afford that, if that's what you want, is something that covers you, you know, $5 million lifetime maximum or whatever, you know, that's the kind of a policy you want. Then you buy that on the open market. There are many policies like that, negative selection or otherwise. If what we're trying to do is make Minnesota Care look like a private sector product, one argument might be, you know, perhaps they should go buy that on the market, and maybe the state could help subsidize that for them.
Mr. Chair, I think the problem is there's a prohibition in state law against doing that. And that's why we need the legislation, because you can't get Minnesota Care if you also have a private product. And I don't know if Representative Abler's bill is going at that. I know Representative Falk bills gets after that issue.
Well, Mr. Chair, just quickly, I mean, that's kind of my suggestion, that maybe you don't go on Minnesota Care, you get your own private policy.
But we'd need a statutory change to do that, is all I'm saying.
Because
we have a prohibition, you can't go on Minnesota Care and also have a private.
But you don't go on Minnesota Care, you don't have a
private. And, Mr. Chair, I believe Representative Gottwald has an amendment to my bill.
Okay, thank you, Representative Abler, and if you wish to remain there, you can do that, but now we're going to deal with the bulk bill. Where is it?
Ms. Chairman.
And I would move, this is going to be, I would move that House File 1524, I would move that it be recommended to be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus finance bill. So, Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Representative Andrew Falk, and before you is House File 1524. This was brought to me by the West Central Healthcare Purchasing Alliance. It was a number of proposals that they had over the course of the previous year. And one of the things Minnesota...
They were visiting this committee...
was it yesterday?
Or maybe last Friday, I don't know.
Yeah. one of the things that Minnesota Care is often used in rural parts of the state, but it maybe doesn't work as well for some of the people who are involved in farm operations or rural types of ag business because of the inpatient cap, or cap of $10,000. A lot of these people rely on their farms or their farm assets as their form of business. And if there is the possibility or the threat that if they have a catastrophic event occur, that they could lose their assets, they lose the ability for their production of income. And so this was a suggestion brought to me that it would allow for the purchase of supplemental catastrophic insurance if you're enrolled in Minnesota Care currently, as has been alluded, I think, just in the previous comments back and forth, that if you are on Minnesota Care, you are not eligible for any other form of coverage. And so this bill simply would offer the option of allowing individuals to buy supplemental catastrophic insurance that would cover inpatient hospitalizations primarily if they were to occur above that $10,000 level. It's a fairly simple bill, and I would take any questions.
Questions? Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think, you know, when I look at having listened to some of these things, that it starts out as an option, and then pretty soon some can afford it and some can't. And then the next thing is, well, we got to treat everybody equal. The next thing you know, the state is on the hook for paying for all of them to have that. When I've heard Representative Gutwalt's bill, you know, it seems like we're taking a step into this, which can cause us some real future inequity issues. And can you, have you addressed that concern about unequal treatment of, it's an option for everybody, but not all can afford it?
Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kiffmeyer, I guess my response would be is if a person is faced, I look at this as a way to potentially save money, because if you have the option of purchasing catastrophic insurance, if you have a major issue, if something that causes you to exceed that $10,000 cap, what are your options? You may declare bankruptcy. It may just be absorbed by the provider or the hospital. And so the fact that you're able to, and I'm not saying this is going to work for all enrollees in Minnesota Care, but I think there are a percentage that this may be an option for. It offers the ability to help pay for or to survive a catastrophic event without having to go through bankruptcy or to consider having a loss of assets. And specifically for people, I mean, as you can probably imagine, in a rural part of the state where farms are people's source of income. It's not like they have always a job that they're going to, but they're relying upon their land or their equipment to be the source of their livelihood.
The if I could just explain, the one of the thoughts behind the $10,000 cap was that if people are on Minnesota Care and they were relatively poor and they hit that $10,000 cap, they could spend down and then get on medical assistance. But if you're at the high end of the income limit for families with kids, you could probably afford one of these policies on the outside. But if you're poor, you wouldn't be able to. Yeah, Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative Falk, I do understand the reasoning for that. I do understand that farmers are in their land, and so spending down their assets, it's just not a real feasible thing. So on the policy side on all of that, I do understand that people are in those situations where it is not helpful to them to have to sell their homes or do certain things with their assets, or especially farmers or even some people who have a business. I mean, their business asset may have value, but selling it in order to do some of these health care things, I do understand the policy side of it. I think my concern, because it's a finance committee, was the fiscal implications, the finances, and also I know that in this particular case, this is not costing us, but what I look down the road in the future legislation is that now it starts out as an option you can do, and pretty soon we'll have a piece of legislation that will say, now this isn't fair, so we should pay for everybody, and it's a fiscal commitment that happens in the healthcare area a lot, where we take these kinds of steps, and then later on we end ourselves up in fiscal trouble by trying very hard to do these things. But this may end up later on being a fiscal issue. And so I was just trying to focus on the finances, but maybe Representative Gutwalt has something to add to that. But that's, I wanted to focus on that piece of it, not the good policy or the good idea that you mentioned or the problem.
There is a cost to this bill, and we'll talk about that later, but Representative Gutwalt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Falk and Representative Abler, I think the issue here, and I think Representative Kiffmeyer was kind of getting around it, is this is exactly why Minnesota Care is not for everybody. And what you're trying to do is retrofit a safety net program to work for people who are in business. Now, if they're low income, it would be, frankly, a much simpler and smarter approach for the state to actually subsidize a policy that does what you're talking about, protects their assets and doesn't have the $10,000 inpatient limitation. The marketplace is rife with them. Now, if somebody can't afford them, that's a whole other issue. Then we can deal with the affordability issue, and maybe the state helps them with that. But to try to retrofit something that's designed for another purpose, to help those people. I think there was a bill Representative Murphy carried a couple years ago, perhaps, that would have extended Minnesota Care to small businesses, and the argument was the same. It doesn't work for small businesses. Once you blow through the $10,000, your assets are involved, and you could end up with a bankruptcy. That's not what we want. So Minnesota Care, as it's currently constituted, works well for some people, but it's not going to work well for your farmers and other small business people or large business people. At that point, if it's an affordability issue, we need to get them a product that's already designed for that.
Mr. Chair, just
Representative Abler.
On the fiscal note, which I just read here, it's as grumpy as all the things we've talked about here about some of the costs. They thought it would be $100 to $300 a month. If you did it for the whole program, Representative Kiffmeyer's point, it would be $50 per person per month across the system. There would be some significant costs on the paperwork, about $500,000 or something. But I think Representative Falk's point, and the reason I'm the author of mine and signed his, is illustrating the need and the challenge that some of the people who are of modest means that work very hard, especially in his neck of the woods, that have a challenge. So this is one effort to resolve that, and if there's a way to do that, I'm all for it. So,
well, thank you, Representative Abler. I appreciate
let's invite Mr. Greenman down to talk about the fiscal note.
Good luck.
Oh, he just ran outside. There he is. Welcome to the committee.
Thanks. Dave Greenman with the Department of Human Services.
We just want a little discussion on the fiscal note on this bill.
Okay.
We have 1 minute left.
Okay. We do anticipate some costs associated with this. Setting up the systems work to implement this is more complicated than it originally appeared. The reason is we basically need to what's required, at least the way it's currently drafted, is that we set up some new eligibility categories. We set up some systems work to collect premiums for these folks that are in addition to the premiums we'd collect under regular Minnesota Care. We have to set up an alternative benefit set as well that includes the coverage over $10,000. And we're anticipating that, our systems folks are anticipating that it would take about 21 months to complete, and the state share of the cost would be $468,000.
Okay. Do you have any comment on that, Representative Falk? I mean, we have some time to work on this.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that I would be very open to is working with the department to figure out ways that we could make this maybe an easier implementation, or if there's some ways that they could leverage current assets or resources and kind of melding. I mean, this is in the conceptual process. We haven't arrived at a finished product by any means, which is, of course, the reason why we're laying it on the table. But I am definitely open to working with the department to figure out some ways that if they can find some abilities to save costs or to find some synergies, I'm very receptive.
Okay. Well, with that, members, and we do have a couple of months left in the session, I would lay it over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Mr. Greenman and Representative Falk.
Thank you.
And the we have minutes.
No, we don't.
Nope, no minutes. So the meeting is adjourned.
Okay.